T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
My daily practice and the daily practice of 2 of the other 3 co-authors of our study is caring for individuals and couples with infertility. And one of the things that I think a lot about among the patients that I see is, how easy was it for them to be able to come in to get to see me? And then I also think a lot about who are the patients who do not have the means or the knowledge or the ability to come in and see me or one of my colleagues for help building their families. And so I was wondering really then, well, what do we know at a national scale that can help answer the question of how many people really have infertility in our country? And of those people with infertility, how many of them are able to see a doctor for help with that problem, with that disease?
And what'd you find?
So we found, I think, 2 or 3 really important things. The first is that we found that when we asked women if they'd ever, let me just describe very briefly kind of how we went about this. So the Centers for Disease Control runs a survey program called the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. It's run in 2-year cycles, and it's been run for a few decades now in the U.S. And from the years 2013 to 2016, they asked women in that survey, have you ever tried to become pregnant over a period of at least a year without becoming pregnant? They separately asked them whether or not they'd ever been to a doctor or a medical provider because they were unable to get pregnant. And what we found is that about 12.5% of women, or 1 in 8 women, answered yes to the question that they had had trouble getting pregnant for at least a year. And that really means that they have infertility using our standard definitions of infertility. The other important thing that we found is that infertility does not discriminate. It does not discriminate by socioeconomic status, by education, by race or ethnicity. Women of those different groups really reported infertility in very similar rates between them. What was different is that we found that women who were who reported having higher incomes, more advanced educations and degrees, those with who were U.S. citizens and those with health insurance all reported easier or more frequent access to care, that they had gone to see a doctor more commonly than women without those characteristics. And so infertility does not discriminate, but there are clear differences among women in the U.S. who are and are not going to see a doctor because of infertility.
But let me ask you, did that surprise you? Because when I read it, it didn't surprise me. Because I know it's expensive when people go through IVF and things like that. I know it's expensive.
Right, and that's a great question. And so, no, it did not necessarily surprise me, but that's because this is sort of what I do every day in my work, and it's certainly something it sounds like you are exposed to as well and have experienced or have seen or heard about. But there really have been no national data thus far that have described this in a reproducible, reliable, kind of research-based manner. And so we think that this is really important data because this now, for the first time, provides physicians, policymakers, patients, advocates with rigorous scientific data to support what is sort of an intuition that I think many of us have. And we hope with this scientific data then we can help advocates, policymakers, physicians, and patients, you know, advocate for changes to help more women access infertility care.
Yeah. Is there anything like if someone that doesn't have the means to get in, it's sort of like, in my opinion, I don't really know if this is correct or not, but sort of like plastic surgery, if I want to go get a facelift, it's not considered like medically necessary, so I have to come up with the money. And that's sort of how I've thought of infertility, that it's something that I don't know that your insurance is required to pay for, but I don't know. Is that correct?
Well, and I think that's a really interesting point, and I think that there are many in the country that have a perspective similar to yours. There are, I think, many others in the country that have a perspective that infertility is a disease, much like diabetes is a disease, high blood pressure is a disease, heart disease is a disease. And actually, the World Health Organization has come out and quite clearly stated that infertility is a disease. The American Society for Reproductive Medicine has also clearly stated that infertility is a disease and should be treated as such. And the American Medical Association actually recently endorsed those World Health Organization's definitions of infertility being a disease. And so I think if you look at some of the really important national and international bodies that think about health and healthcare, they are clearly stating that infertility is a disease. And I think for those of us that have had friends or family members that have struggled with infertility, certainly my experience has been that my friends and family would state quite clearly that infertility was not a choice that they were making. They were not choosing to have trouble building a family. And I think for many folks, building a family is a very central part of who they are, about what they hope to do in life. And so this disease is preventing them from achieving a very important kind of life goal for them. And one I think that we should also admit is important for society to have a population that is able to reproduce and grow. And so I'll tell you, quite personally, I believe actually that infertility is not a choice that patients make, and that our insurance companies should therefore not, our insurance policies rather, should not treat it as a choice, but instead treat it as a disease, much like the World Health Organization and the American Medical Association have agreed that it is.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was getting at, because I don't think it's a choice, but I think that insurance companies, that there's a reason, just like you have to come up with money for certain things that they don't want to pay for. My understanding is they don't pay for a lot of the infertility procedures.
Right, and so that is a problem that many, many patients and families in the U.S. face. Interestingly, there are about 16 states in the U.S. that have passed laws that require that employers of a certain size or in that state include infertility coverage on the insurance plans that are provided for their patients. So if you happen to live in a state like Massachusetts or Illinois and work for a certain type of employer, you will often have coverage for infertility care as part of your standard health care. If you live in other states, like Michigan, for example, there's not a state law like that in Michigan. However, some employers have made independent decisions to include infertility care as part of the benefits package for their employees. And so there are some folks in the U.S. who don't face that financial struggle because infertility care is covered much like their other diseases. And I think it's really, to a large degree, historical in terms of the way infertility has been thought about over the past 40 and 50 years as to why, in many other situations, it's not included as a covered benefit on insurance plans.
Do you know, this doesn't have anything to do with your study, I was just curious, is that the same way, sort of, if someone was having a surrogate? Will insurance ever cover that?
So it's a great question. I don't know the exact answer to that, but I believe that laws about surrogacy are different from state to state.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting. Is there anything else you want to add that I didn't ask that's important?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess we covered the parts about infertility being a disease. I think we're probably one of the really big things that we covered. I think in terms of what people should take from this, our hope is that people, as I said, look at this as, reproducible, reliable scientific evidence that points to certain pockets of our population most in need of our attention and care. And so those would be, women, with lower incomes, with lower educational levels, those who are non-U.S. citizens, and those, without health insurance, as those who might need the most, or might need some new or different attention, new ideas about how to make sure they are accessing very important health care, and in particular, infertility care. One limitation of this study that I should also mention is that, this question was asked by the CDC only to women, And it's important to also acknowledge that men face infertility as well. And so we were talking earlier about some of the historical perspectives of what infertility is. And I think another historical perspective is that infertility is a women's disease, which the data more and more is telling us is just not true. And about half of the cases where a couple is not able to have a pregnancy, the male partner is contributing to the troubles of the couple getting pregnant. And so when couples are having trouble conceiving, we do highly encourage both the male and the female to go and see a urologist for the man and a reproductive endocrinologist for the woman to make sure that all of the bases are covered. And that's just one thing that we couldn't touch on in this study because the question was only asked of women.
Yeah, but I would imagine it's the same thing, though. If they don't have insurance or they don't have the income, then maybe they can't go get tested either.
Yeah, I agree. I would suspect that we would find very similar things if the question was also asked of men.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.